By and large, I'm partial to Americans. They make a great affectation of disliking the English. But I've discovered that underneath they dearly love a lord, and if you're civil and cool and don't play it with too high a hand, you can impose on them quite easily. I'm not a lord, of course, but I've got the airs when I want 'em, and know how to use them in moderation. When they came aboard the Balliol College, raging angry and full of zeal, I bided my time while they herded us all forward, and didn't say a word until the young lieutenant commanding them had ordered us all under hatches. They were pushing us to the companion and being none too gentle about it when I stepped smartly out of the line and said to him, very rapidly and civilly, that I wanted to see his commander on a most urgent matter. "God damn your impudence, you'll do your talking in New Orleans. Much good it may do you, now get below." I gave him a cool stare. "Believe me, sir," says I in my best cherry-picker voice, "I am in most solemn earnest. Please do nothing untoward." I tilted my head slightly towards the Balliol College hands who were being pushed below. "These people must not know," I said quietly, "but I am a British naval officer. I must see your commander without delay." He stared at me, but he was sharp. He waited till our last man was down the companion and then demanded an explanation. I told him I was Lieutenant Combo, Royal Navy, on special service from the Board of Admiralty, which I assured him I could prove with ease. That settled it. I was hustled off under guard aboard the USS Cormorant, and there it was plain sailing all the way. Captain Abraham Fairbrother, a very spry young gentleman, didn't believe a word I said until I laid Comba's papers before his bulging eyes. Then the poor soul took it all in like a hungry fish. Of course, I had to tell him a tremendous tale, but barring the fact that I wasn't Comba, the whole thing was gospel true, which always makes lying easier. He shook his fair young head in amazement and shook my hand as though it was a pump handle. "I feel it an honor to welcome you aboard, sir," says he. "I had no notion that such people as yourself, sir, were engaged in this work. By George, it's wonderful! My congratulations, sir!" And he actually saluted. I just had to sit back and let him arrange matters. First, I must be delivered to Washington with all speed. Nothing would do but he must carry me to Baltimore in his own brig, while the sloop could take the Balliol College into New Orleans. Arnold would have loved Captain Fairbrother, who was your genuine northern nigger lover. Brainless as a bat, of course, and just the man for my present needs. But Washington wouldn't be as easy to satisfy. We made capital speed to Baltimore, and from there, after Fairbrother had emphasized my importance to his commodore, we were taken by train to Washington. I was looking sharp to make myself scarce, but Fairbrother stuck like a leech, so I just had to carry the thing through with a bold, bluff front. In Washington, there was building on every hand, with scaffolding about even in the middle of the city, and the outer roads all churned mud with the autumn rain, but fringed with fine houses half completed. I got to know it well in the Civil War time, but I never liked it. Sticky as Calcutta in summer, and I could always smell fever in the air. But sticky or not, the officials who lived there were damn sharp. Fairbrother delivered me at the Department of the Navy, where a white-whiskered admiral heard my tale and damned his stars at every turn. Then he handed me on to a section much like our Board of Trade, where several hard-faced civilians took up the running, and I went through the thing again. Finally, one of them, a fat little fellow called Moultrie, asked me exactly what I could contribute to the anti-slave trade campaign apart from giving evidence against the crew of the Balliol College.